There is no experiment today. It's an introduction to microscopy, the technique of using a microscope. And a microscope, any kind of microscope, of course, allows you to see things that are too small to be seen without the help of a microscope. There are major categories of microscopes, though, including the category this belongs to, which is a light microscope. So this is not only a microscope, more specifically, it is a light microscope, because humanly visible light passes through the specimen, with whatever you're trying to get a look at, and through lens before it hits your eye. Not all microscopes do that. There are electron microscopes that use beams of electrons instead of light. We don't have one of those here. But another example of a light microscope besides the one you're using is in this third cabinet, which you can also use. Those are dissecting scopes. What is the spelling of dissecting? Okay.
There are two S's, yeah. It's often misspelled.
A dissecting scope doesn't magnify things as much as this scope does. But as you play around with it either today or next week, because it's a two-week thing, it's cool to look at your fingers and things like that. Anyway, more specifically than saying that this scope you have is a light microscope, it is a slide microscope, whereas a dissecting scope isn't. A slide microscope is used only with slides. If you have other things to look at, then you use a different kind of scope. But this can be used only with glass slides on which the specimen is placed. All right, now, we're doing 2 weeks of microscopy. And that's partly because this first week, it basically just lets you get used to using the thing and to realize that microscopy is difficult. It's very probable that everyone here sucks at it because everyone does it first. And so you get an appreciation of actually that it's more than just putting your eyes up there to get a good image. So I'll talk about the anatomy of the scope and how to properly use it, and hopefully you will follow those instructions and use it properly. Part of the difficulty is to make sure you're using it correctly. But in the base of the instrument is a lamp. It's a light source. So you can go ahead and turn it on. There's a switch on the right side. That's simply on off. And if it's plugged in, you'll probably see a light, but maybe not. And that's because that's just on off. On the other side of the base is a rheostat, a wheel that is a dimmer. So you might not see the light if it's not turned up far enough. Now that dimmer is important, and don't forget that it's there. It's a way to control how much light is going through the slide. And if that's all that you want to control, the amount of light, then that's the control you want to use, because that's the only thing that gets affected when you do that. There's other things that affect how much light goes through, but that's the dimmer is specifically designed for that purpose. And a common mistake is to think more light is better always. So people just max out the dimmer, but you can wash out the image if there's too much light. So remember it's there and play around with it, because you can get a much better look at things if you turn it down sometimes. Specifically, when you're using lower magnification lenses, they collect a lot more light. So it will look washed out if you use too much. But when you go to higher magnification, not nearly as much light gets through, and that's when it's appropriate to turn up the dimmer. Anyway, that's all down in the base. And the light shines through a hole in this platform, which is what you put the slide on, but it's not properly called the platform, even though it is a platform. What's the real name?
The stage.
The stage, exactly. So this black platform is called the stage. And when you load, and eventually you will today, when you load a slide onto the scope. You're putting it onto the stage, but you always do this in the same exact way, which is the only proper way to do it, and you don't care at all when you put a slide onto the stage whether it is centered on the light that's coming through the stage. And that's because the only thing you should care about when you load a slide is that you properly put it into this, on this model, it's a silver clip. Notice that one side of the clip comes out a little bit. And so you put the slide in there, open it up so you can slide it in there all the way to the back till it hits the back of the metal, and then let go of the spring. That is the only way that you can properly load a slide, and it doesn't matter whether the slide is centered. And that's because this whole clip mechanism moves with respect to the stage and is controlled by a pair of concentric knobs that hang down to the right of the stage. So go ahead and twist those, and you'll notice that they move the clip mechanism. All right, that whole mechanism, both the silver clip and the knobs that control it, are called the mechanical stage because it moves. So you load the slide the only way it goes into the clip, and then if you want to center it over the light, you use the mechanical stage knobs to roughly center it. Notice also that these two concentric knobs work very much like an Etch-a-Sketch pair of knobs, right? One of them moves it left and right, the other one moves it away from you or towards you. And so you can have any combination of those. Okay, now, even more specifically than saying that this is a slide microscope, this is an example of what we call a compound microscope. What is it that makes it compound?
Different lenses?
Well, it's true that a compound scope will have different lenses. That's not...
Like multiple at once?
That's better. Not quite specific enough. I don't want you to think that it's compound simply because it has more than one lens. For instance, it's not compound because there are two lenses you look through. That makes it binocular. That's right. A compound scope is one that has two types of lenses, and the light passes through one type first, magnifies it a certain amount, and then it passes through a second lens and magnifies it even more before it reaches your eyes. So the simplest possible compound scope would have one lens first and then another lens after. But there are two categories of lenses, the first one and the second one. What is the first category called that light passes through first? What is it? Not first. Objective lenses, yes. The objective lens is so called because it is the lens that's closest to the object, the specimen that you're trying to magnify, the slide, in other words. Well, I said that a compound scope has to have at least one. Well, this one has more than one objective lens. It actually has, looks like there are three, right? The objective lenses differ, notice, in their length. The barrels are shorter or longer, which determines the magnification. So each lens has its own magnification. But they're all mounted, notice, on this swivel. What is the proper name for the swivel that holds the objective lenses? That's called the nose piece. So you adjust magnification on this model by swiveling the nose piece to go to a different objective lens. The individual magnification of the objective of each objective lens is stamped on its side. For instance, the red one is marked as 4x. 4x means that due just to that lens by itself, whatever you're looking at is going to look four times bigger than it actually is. But in a compound scope, light goes through that objective, whichever one you have chosen, That magnifies it a certain amount. Then it all, then it, before it hits your eyes, it goes through a second lens. And those lenses, however many there are, one or two, are called ocular lenses. And ocular means of the eye. So they're named for the fact that those are the lenses you put your eyes up to. The simplest compound scope would be one objective and one ocular, no choice. It's still compound, though, because it's two stages of magnification. This is a binocular scope because it has two ocular lenses, and that's an advantage because it gives you what's called stereoscopic vision. It gives you three-dimensionality to the image, just like having two eyes does in normal life rather than one eye. You know, when you grab for something on a table, like a paperclip or something, you're a lot better at calculating where it actually is with two eyes because your brain calculates the slight difference in what the two eyes are seeing to figure out the distance. But if you have one eye closed, you might miss that paperclip slightly. You don't have that depth perception. And this is another thing that I see happening in students that are just using a scope for the first time. They don't want to use these properly because it takes a little bit of fiddling with. So I see them closing one eye, which is completely defeating the extra expense of having a binocular scope. This brings up one of two ways in which you need to personalize this instrument for your body. That's why everyone has its own scope today. You're not sharing them because your bodies are different. Each human has what is called an interpupillary distance, which is simply the distance between the two pupils. That's not a constant among humans. It varies from person to person. Some people have eyes very close together, some farther apart. Well, grab these oculars and notice that they can be moved farther apart or closer together. All right. Now, you don't have a slide in there, but it's fine. Go ahead and turn the light on. If you look through the oculars, you should see a circle. That circle, which you always see, it's always a circle, whatever's in it. That circle is called the field of view. All right. If you see two circles overlapping, like a Visa logo, or no, a MasterCard, sorry, then you're using it improperly. You don't have the interpupillary distance set properly for your eyes. It's also affected by how close your eyes are to it, though. So to adjust this for your particular eyes, you need to have the distance set so that when you have both eyes open, you see one circle. All right, that's one way that you personalize it. I'll talk about another in a minute. All right, now, when you have a scope like this one that has multiple objective lenses in the same scope, always on the nose piece, like I was saying, then nowadays they're designed to be parfocal. A parfocal scope is one in which if you've already focused it for one objective lens, then you move to another objective lens. It should still be at least roughly in focus. And all you have to do is fine-tune the focus. That's what parfocal refers to. And speaking of focusing, you should always, every time you switch slides, you should always start focusing with the objective that is the lowest power, which is the shortest one. It's the red-banded one on your model. Any given scope that has multiple objective lenses has one that is the lowest power. It's not always 4x, but it is on this model. What do we call, in general, the lowest powered objective lens?
Scanning?
Right, the scanning lens. Now, this field of view looks like a circle to you. It always looks like it's the same size circle, but it's really not. When you're looking at a slide, you're never looking at the entire slide, right? You're looking at some part of it. So there is a circle that appears to you that is some fraction of the slide. And then there's stuff in there that you're looking at. If you go up in magnification by switching to another objective, it'll look like the same size circle, but really It's like zooming in. It's a smaller circle, and therefore the things in it look bigger. Okay? The point here is that the lowest power objective is like being zoomed out, and it's called the scanning lens, because when you first put a slide down there, you don't know where the interesting stuff is. You want to get a wide-angle view, moving the mechanical stage so that you can take a look at different parts of the slide, find something interesting, and then when you find something interesting, always put it as close to the center of the field of view as possible. Because when you then go to higher magnification, if it's on the edge, it's going to be out of the next view, right? Because you're going to a smaller circle on the center. So center the things you want to get a closer look at before you go up in magnification. So that's why it's called the scanning lens, and you always start with that every time you switch slides. The main reason that you always start, well, there's multiple reasons. One reason, not the main reason yet, that you always start with the scanning lens is because it's the shortest, so it gives you the most room to put the slide in there without touching the lenses or anything, getting them all dirty. This brings up another issue. The stage is controlled by duplicate pairs of focus knobs. There's one on the right and left of the neck. This is the neck region of the scope. And so grab these are also concentric knobs, but they move together. Move the big one and you'll see that the small one moves even faster. They are both moving the stage, though. You won't really see it much with the small one, which is the fine focus knob. But the large one, which is the coarse focus knob, go ahead and twist that and look at the effect on the stage. It moves the stage up or down. Well, these are focus knobs, and that's how you focus a scope, by moving the stage up or down, because a slide or a specimen on a slide, this is a side of the barrel of the objective lens, this is the edge of the slide. Whatever is on a slide is only going to be in focus for your eyes if it's at the right distance from the lens. And by the way, the distance from the lens to the slide is called the working distance. All right? Well, strictly speaking, there is only one exact distance that is correct focus. And that's why these knobs are focus knobs, because they get you to exactly that correct distance from the lens for it to be in focus. But because of the way human eyes work, there is some error that's tolerable that we won't notice. There is one perfect focus point, but there is what is called a depth of focus, which is a range of distances. And our eyes can't detect any out of focusness unless it gets too bad. In other words, if this is the true focus, we can be a little bit closer or a little bit farther away, and it'll still, to our eyes, look in focus. All right, that's called, that range, however big it is called the depth of focus. Now back to why you always start with the scanning lens. I gave you the one reason, it's so you can scan the slide to find something interesting. But you always start with it because it gives you the most room to load the slide. And it also, and this is the most important reason, it is by far the most easy of the objectives to focus. So you always start with that to get your focus first. And since it's a parafocal scope, you've done the major work of focusing, and when you go up to higher objective lenses, all you should ever have to tweak is the fine focus knob if it's not still in focus. All right, now, when you go up to a higher powered objective, things change. I've said that the field of view decreases, right? It looks like it's the same size circle to you, but it's really a smaller circle. So the field of view decreases at higher magnification. the depth of focus also decreases. This is why it makes it's harder and harder to focus a higher and higher powered objective. That depth of focus gets so small at high magnification that it's not even the thickness of a single cell. So you can't even have one cell all in focus at once. By using the fine focus knob on a high power objective, you can actually focus on different layers within the cell, but the whole thing can't be in focus at once. Okay, now, I want to go through the proper steps of actually loading a slide and starting to look at it. One thing that's important after you already have turned on the light and adjusted your interpupillary distance with the oculars is that you want to use the coarse focus knob to bring the stage all the way down until it stops. There's two reasons for this, but one is much more important than the other. One is that is going to maximize the amount of space you have to work with to load the slide without breaking anything or getting anything dirty. That's the less important reason. There's a much more important reason. Now, if you didn't do this, if you just came in and put a slide onto the stage, whatever position it's in from whoever used it last, it's almost certainly not going to be in perfect focus, right? Because it's at the wrong distance. But there's two ways that it can be out of focus. It can be out of focus because the stage is too low or because it's too high. And your eyes can't tell, it's just out of focus. If you put this all the way down, it's definitely not going to be in focus. But you know that it's definitely out of focus because it's too low. And therefore, by bringing it up with the coarse focus knob, and it can take longer than you think, but eventually something should pop into focus. On the other hand, if it was out of focus because it's too high and you went up under the assumption, then it would get even worse and worse and you would never focus it. So that's the more important reason. Always start on the bottom. I need to say something else first. Okay, so start it with it all the way down. You have your interpupillary distance set. You have the light on, some intermediate dimness at first. You put your slide in the only way you can do it. And then you use the mechanical stage to roughly center the slide onto the light. That's all before you even put your eyes up to it, right? Now, this next part is important for a binocular scope, which you're using. What you want to do then is close your left eye, look only through your right eye, through the right ocular lens. And then you won't be able to really do this until you have a slide in there, but just listen to the procedure. While you're looking through that right ocular lens, use the coarse focus knob to bring it up. It'll be out of focus, like I said, probably for longer than you're expecting. But assuming you have it centered on something, just keep going and eventually something will pop into focus or something will become visible. Then you use the coarse focus knob, continue to turn it until it gets as good as you can get it with the coarse focus knob for that eye. Then you use just the fine focus to get it as even better if you can. Once you've gotten that perfect focus for your right eye, then you should leave your hands off of both focus knobs, because if you change it, you're going to unfocus your right eye. All right? I said before that the interpupillary distance is different from human to human. Well, there's another variable, which is the ability within one individual for the right eye to focus versus the left eye. It's not always equal. And that's the other way that you need to personalize the scope for your eyes. So, you've already focused it for your right eye, if you followed those instructions. Then you close the right eye and look through just the left eye through the left ocular lens. Chances are it will no longer be in perfect focus. If it is, you're done, but it probably won't. And that's where you do a separate focus adjustment, not with the focus knobs, but with just the left ocular lens. Notice this knurled black ring? If you hold on to that and then swivel the outer part, it will go, it'll move the barrel either in or out. That's a separate focus just for that lens. And so you do that with your left eye open until you get the focus perfect for your left eye. At that point, since you hadn't messed with the focus from before, it should be good for both of your eyes. And if the distance is set correctly between your eyes, you should see one view, one circle, and everything's as good as it can be. Except maybe you want to adjust the light, the amount of light. Is that all clear? So do those steps when you're using it today. This is all just a practice day, more or less. There are two major categories of slides. So-called prepared slides, which are made for you. Those are purchased from a supplier, and therefore those are not ones that go in the trash. Actually, no slide goes in the trash. That's important because they're made of glass. But don't throw these ones away. These are the prepared slides. And there's three labeled trays that they're on. Dog flea, colored threads, letter E. Obey the labels when you put them back, because it's a pain in the ass for the staff to resort them. Anyway, you look at each of these three. It doesn't matter what order. The dog flea is just interesting to look at, because you usually just see a flea with the naked eye, no detail. There's a lot of detail, though, when you actually look at it under a scope. The colored threads here are for a good reason that I've already talked about. The colored thread slides features three colored threads. I think it's red, yellow, and green, but it doesn't matter. Three threads that are layered. They're at three different layers within the thickness of the slide. And so one's in the middle of the other two. And this demonstrates what I was saying about depth of focus. If you use the colored thread slide on the scanning lens, which is the lowest powered and has the highest depth of focus, because it is such a deep focus, all three threads can look in focus at once. But then when you go to high power, that depth of focus is not as wide as the thickness of those three layers. And so you can focus on one and the other two will be out of focus. Okay, so that just demonstrates that. The letter E doesn't seem like a very exciting thing to look at. It's big enough to see with the naked eye. When you look at this, you can see it's clearly a letter E, a typed letter E. A little bit smaller than you find in most books, but it's easy to see that it's an E. The reason that this is here is to demonstrate something important about how the scopes work. When you look through a scope, the image that you see is right, left, reversed, it's backwards, and it's upside down. And so the E is big enough so you can see with your naked eye what direction it's in. You can position it so it's like a regular E. But then when you put it in the scope and look at it, it'll be backwards and upside down. Not only that, but when you use the mechanical stage to move the slide, the image will look like it's going to the left, say, but when you look at the slide, it's actually going toward the right because everything is reversed. That's why you have that to look at. So those three slides, at least, you have to do today. The other major category of slides, though, are ones that you make yourself called wet mounts. And those are disposable, but never in the trash because these are pieces of glass. You probably should make a wet mount today. You don't technically have to, but if you don't do it today, you're going to have to next week. You make another one next week too, so you might as well do one on each day. But there's a proper way to make a wet mount. You use a blank slide, which itself is, you have to be careful with because it's a piece of glass, but it's not all that dangerous. What is dangerous, though, is the cover slip that goes over the slide. You sandwich whatever you're looking at between the slide and the cover slip. And the cover slip is much thinner and much more likely to hurt you if you're not careful. Now, it's easy to be careful with these for yourself, but if you don't pay attention to where these are, if it gets into like a napkin or something and someone picks up the napkin, it'll easily go right through your palm. So don't let that happen. Pay attention to where these are. I don't want to see them scattered. If you accidentally take out more than one, which is all you need at a time, put the others back in the little case. But careful, because you can easily break these and cut yourself. Anyway, a wet mount is something you put a droplet of something on a slide, like the pond water. We have samples of water from the ponds on campus. And it should have something interesting to look at it. By the way, if you want to figure out what you're looking at, you're likely to find something that looks just like it on one of these posters. But anyway, to make a wet mount, if this is the slide, you put a droplet roughly in the middle, and then you want to put the cover slip over it. But if you just haphazardly put the cover slip onto the droplet, you're going to trap a bunch of air under there, causing a bunch of little air bubbles, which most people confuse as cells. They say, oh man, I have all kinds of cells. Well, no, they're just air bubbles. You don't want to have those. So the proper way of doing it, if this is the cover slip, after you have the droplet there, is to put the cover slip on its edge right to one side of the droplet, and then just let it fall. And that will push all the air out one side, hopefully, and you might get one or two bubbles, but mostly it'll be just liquid under there. That's the best view. Okay, so as far as today is concerned, you really just have to get up to page 80, I think it is. You can make your pond wet mount. And you don't have to today, but you might want to play around with the dissecting scopes as well. One of the 2 weeks, you should use the dissecting scopes to see what they're all about. Next week, we'll do the cells part, which is still in the same chapter, but you have more specific things to do next week. Get used to using the scopes today.